Blog Talk Radio.
To the show, Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio. Kyle Kalinske here with you on a little muggy, cloudy kind of Friday going on over here in New York. I don't know where you're listening to the show from, but I'd like some sunshine in my life, and I don't just mean that metaphorically. I mean that quite literally. Got a lot of great stuff to talk about today. I'll give you a little rundown before we jump into it. First and foremost, Arkansas Representative Tom Cotton, of course, he's a Republican. He's big on the Benghazi stuff. So he's going to go on the floor and give a speech where he ironically slams fake outrage as he does fake outrage. And he's going to make one of the worst points I've ever heard on the floor. So we'll play that and I'll break that down for you. Also, a really good idea, believe it or not, to help the poor coming out of all places, Saudi Arabia. What the fuck? So I'll break that down for you also and see how we can possibly incorporate a similar idea here in the U.S. Also, some credit to the Pope today because he said something good on the issue of income inequality. He's been pretty good on that for a while now. Rush Limbaugh naturally is going to go ahead and tell the Pope what Jesus really is in favor of, because who knows better than a talk radio host who loves OxyContin. Also, as we move along, somebody came up with a brilliant way to respond to the recent Supreme Court ruling on prayer. God, it's so smart. It's so great. All right, I'm going to cut it off there because I don't want to give away too much. Some new theories on Adam and Eve and what exactly the tree of knowledge is and the apple is that they ate from a fundamentalist. That's interesting. And North Korea pens one of the most racist articles you've ever heard in your life, and they're specifically talking about President Obama. So shit just got real. We'll talk about all that and much, much more. So let's get started. And I want to do that with Republican on Republican violence, not literally, verbal abuse, I guess we could say, the establishment Republicans versus a more libertarian wing / Tea Party wing, kind of. All right, let me break this down for you. Representative Devin Nunes went after Representative Justin Amash. They're both Republicans, and Nunes is viewed more of an establishment kind of Republican. That's how he's viewed. And you also – Amash is more of like a libertarian flavor Republican, somewhat more principled, slightly better on the issues. Well, since the establishment candidate, Tom Tillis, won the primary over some Tea Party guys in North Carolina, now the establishment feels like they're bulletproof. They feel emboldened. So listen to this line about Devin from Nunes to Justin Amash. Listen to what he said about him. Quote, he's been leading the charge and not telling the truth about NSA surveillance policies. He's been fanning the flames, and it gets to the point where my assessment is this is Al-Qaeda's best friend in Congress. Whoa, dude. See, it's we always get, like, outraged, and we always, you know, cover the stories when the Republicans go crazy when they go after Democrats, and they fucking, you know, they break out the AK-47 and they start mowing people down metaphorically. Like, you know how they are. When Republicans attack. They go right for the jugular. There's no fucking around. They go right for the jugular. Well, they do that when it's Republican on Republican violence also, and this is a perfect example. So think about what he's saying. He's saying because Representative Amash doesn't love every war we engage in, and because he's not in favor of spying on 300 million Americans without specific warrants, therefore he loves Al-Qaeda. How insane is that? Now keep in mind, the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution protects you against unreasonable search and seizure and mandates that the government needs to have specific warrants if they're going to search your stuff or go through your private information or data. So all these different NSA programs that are collecting all of your metadata and all of your information and all of your internet searches and all of your phone calls and all of your text messages, it's absolutely positively 100% unconstitutional. In fact, there's been some court cases where that's exactly what the judge said, that this is the most wanton violation of the Fourth Amendment that they've ever seen in their lives. Now, of course, it's continuing to make its way through the court system, and it'll probably eventually end up with the Supreme Court. But to tell somebody that because they're against brazen spying on everybody that they're in favor of Al-Qaeda, how ridiculous is that? It's like saying because you're in favor of the U.S. Constitution, you're in favor of Al-Qaeda. In other words, it's like saying the founders are in favor of Al-Qaeda. It's just such a dumb attack. It's not even like people are outraged by it, and rightfully so, and they're offended by it, rightfully so. But I very rarely play the O card, the offended card, because I think it's more interesting the truth value of a claim. So even if something's offensive but it's true, okay, then it is what it is. What are you going to do? It doesn't matter if you're offended or not. It's true. But in a situation like this, it's offensive and dead wrong. It's just a stupid thing to say. And also, here's another gigantic chunk of irony in the conversation. The people who are in favor of the interventionist policies, so the people who love the drone strikes, the people who love the 900 U.S. military bases around the world, the people who love the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, it is those people and their policies that has strengthened Al-Qaeda and strengthened the Taliban. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. If you look at the studies, there's been a few, but there was one, I think it was in 2007, Peter Bergen was involved, and they came up with the term the Iraq effect. And basically what that means is the CIA refers to it as blowback or unintended consequences of an interventionist foreign policy. And, long story short, you gave Al-Qaeda a better argument to recruit because you killed so many civilians. That's the gist of it. So for somebody like Nunez to say, oh, look at this guy, he's not in favor of every war he's ever seen, therefore he loves Al-Qaeda. No, wait a second, but your policies are actually making Al-Qaeda stronger. That's a fact. If you love the wars and you love the spying and you love the interventionism and you love this neocon mindset, you are making terrorism worse in the world. Never mind the fact that they're actually taking part in terrorism. I won't even get into that. The fact that, U.S. imperialism very blatantly and plainly is terrorism in many respects, especially when we went around overthrowing governments in South America and where the term banana republic comes from, right? It's when we overthrew South American governments so that the Chiquita Banana Company can take the bananas. But think about that, man. That's us doing violence for a political end. That's the very definition of terrorism. But the way we look at it is, no. If the U.S. does it, it could never be terrorism. That's a fact. No, it's not a fact, and you look silly when you argue that. So Devin Nunez with a gigantic fail here. And let me also say, here's what's going on in the situation between, the establishment Republicans versus the more libertarian Republicans. The establishment Republicans, they think they're winning because they're actually, they have a better intellectual case to make. Like, they think they're more right on their policies, and they think that more American people agree with them than agree with libertarians. But the actual reason why establishment Republicans beat more libertarian Republicans is because the establishment Republicans get all the fucking money from the donors. It's amazing that they haven't figured that out. The establishment Republicans are the biggest sellouts, so they get the most money, so they can run the most campaign ads, they can get their name out there more often, and then they end up winning the elections. The libertarian Republicans are totally discriminated against when it comes to donors, because the donors realize, wait a second, this guy's actually principled. This guy's actually in favor of a free market, so he wants to take away my subsidies and take away my special money I get from the government. So, and that's why, by the way, Ron Paul, agree with him or disagree with him on whatever policy we're talking about here, he's a mixed bag, but lobby issues to go right past his office. There were stories out of Congress that lobbyists would be like, don't even bother trying to talk to Ron Paul. He's not interested in doing business with us. Why? Because he was more principled. He actually believed in small government for everybody. All the Republicans are against welfare for poor people, but they're for welfare for corporations. Well, Ron Paul was one of the guys who said, no, I'm against welfare for anybody. So when libertarian Republicans run, they don't get to raise as much money because they're more principled and they're not going to sell out as easy. So that's why establishment Republicans win. But this idiot Devin Nunes is like, oh, no, we're better. Our ideas beat their ideas. That's why we won, and now I'm going to compare them to Al-Qaeda. Please spare me. The idea that people who say, let's mind our business and only use the military when we absolutely have to, and let's abide by people's right to privacy, the idea that those people are more lined up with Al-Qaeda is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. All right. Next. A lot of stuff today. A lot of stuff. Let's move on to Tom Cotton. He makes such a bad argument, man. Okay. Arkansas Representative Tom Cotton is going to give a speech on the floor where he ironically slams fake outrage as he does fake outrage. But also, see if you can grasp his bigger point here. This seriously is one of the dumbest arguments I've ever heard.
Mr. Speaker, a couple lessons I learned in the Army were you move to the sound of gunfire. The most important step in the troop leading procedures is to supervise the execution of your orders. When Americans were fighting for their lives in Benghazi, Barack Obama did neither. He sent no quick reaction force, and he didn't even stay in the Situation Room to supervise the execution of his orders. We expect more from lieutenants in the Army than our president gave us that night. For 2 years, he's covered up this failure of leadership by stonewalling. Not anymore. We will now get to the truth. But what do our colleagues on the other side of the aisle say to this? They express great outrage at politicizing this matter. When I was leading troops in Iraq in 2006, men and women who were being shot at and blown up by Al-Qaeda, where was the outrage as they fundraised endlessly off the Iraq war? Where was the outrage as they viciously attacked our commanders? Where was the outrage when they said that soldiers were war criminals? Where was the outrage when they said the war was lost? Where was the outrage when they said that only high school dropouts joined the Army? Forgive me if I don't join my Democratic colleagues in sharing in their fake outrage. 4 Americans lost their lives that night in Benghazi. They deserve justice. The American people deserve the truth. One other lesson I learned in the Army is we leave no man behind, and we will not leave these 4 men behind.
He's a rip the paper, because I'm angry. I'm outraged. Do you guys see? Me, Tom Cotton, I'm outraged. Write that down. Do you guys have that written down? Okay, you're the one that's doing fake outrage. It's the most obvious thing I've ever seen in my life. And that really was one of the silliest things I've ever heard. Listen to his argument. What he said is, oh yeah, sure, we are fundraising off of Benghazi, but where was the outrage when the Democrats were fundraising off of Iraq? So what's the main difference? Why is that not the same thing? Think about it. Iraq, there was a policy difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats wanted out of Iraq. So when they say, vote for us, give us money, let us take charge, they're saying that because they want to change the direction of the policy. They're saying that because they want to get all the soldiers out of harm's way. But he's acting like, oh, how dare they, run on Iraq. That's like saying, how dare you run on any political issue where there's actually an issue there where you can have a difference of opinion. That's what a politician's job is, to run on the issues. Benghazi is totally different because you're not saying any policy difference. You're not saying, hey, here's what we would have done differently, and here's why you should give us money, and here's why you should vote for us. You're just saying, 4 Americans died, Barack Obama, 4 Americans died, Barack Obama, 4 Americans died, Barack Obama, give us money. You're not saying you do anything different. You're not saying there was a failure of policy. You're not There's no substance there. With Iraq, there was a substantive difference. The fact that you can make that argument and think you're, like, making a point, you're embarrassing yourself. There's no, he's trying to do a false equivalence. Like, yeah, sure, we fundraise off of Benghazi, guilty, but they fundraised off of Iraq. You should fundraise off of Iraq. You should try to get votes to get in power to end the war. To say Benghazi, 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 you're not getting anything accomplished. You are just exploiting the deaths of four Americans. And then furthermore, if you care so deeply about the deaths of Americans, specifically at consulates and embassies, how about the fact that there were 13 Benghazis under George W. Bush? 13 consulates were attacked. Over 70 people died. Over a dozen Americans died. You didn't say anything when it was your guy in power. Why? Because obviously it's partisan. He's so stupid, man. And he said, Obama's been stonewalling all this time. How many Benghazi hearings has there been? 976? It's been nonstop since it happened that you've been talking about it. You've been doing hearings. Daryl Issa's fucking, I can't stand seeing his face on TV anymore because all he does is talk about this. Who's stonewalling? Nobody's stonewalling anything. And when the New York Times did an investigative report where they had people on the ground that went around and talked to sources on the scene, you know what they found out? The entire narrative from the administration from day one was exactly correct. That there was anger over this YouTube video that led to an attack. And by the way, again, that's not my opinion. That's a fact. And there were other embassies and consulates in the area that also had gigantic protests outside of it because of that video, that anti-Islamic video. So, and also, to the Hillary Clinton point, you know how they always make fun of Hillary Clinton? She said, what does it matter? No, the point she was making is, what does it matter if it was an organized Al-Qaeda attack or if it was a spontaneous attack? Either way, the Americans are dead. Either way, it's a terrible thing. But the right wing hijacked that and said, she said, what does it matter, as if she wants four Americans to die, which that is such a ridiculous assumption. And by the way, that's the point, is that they're just trying to rile up the base, and they're just trying to get the base to believe that Obama wanted the people at the base to die. They're trying to get their political base to believe that Obama wanted people at the consulate to die. And that's gross, man. That's gross. Because such an insinuation, dare I say, that's unpatriotic. You know? Look, when I went after George W. Bush, and when I continue to go after George W. Bush, and when I go after the Republicans, what I'm doing is I'm attacking their intelligence, and I'm attacking their motivations. So I might say, hey, look, they're corrupt, and here's the evidence for that. Or, hey, look, they're idiots, and here's the evidence for that. What I don't say is, George W. Bush wanted Americans to die. But what do these guys do? That's their implication. He called the people to stand down and do this and do that, and we see what the results are. Except he didn't do that. The only outlet that reported that was 60 Minutes, and then they immediately had to come out and apologize after they got bombarded by people saying, that's a bullshit report, and we know it's bullshit, and here's the evidence. So, Representative Tom Cotton, it's a joke, man. It's a joke. It's a joke. See, the Republicans, they know. They got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, man. That's what they did. You know, they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. One of the people who's on the panel, on the new committee about Benghazi, was going around saying, oh, we would never fundraise off of the deaths of four Americans. And then as he was saying that, on the fucking GOP website, it had, you know, they were fundraising off of Benghazi. And then they got caught. So now what do they have to do? The typical move. When you get caught, go on the offense. It's the oldest trick in the book. The oldest trick in the book. Oh, you did something bad? Go on the attack. So to deflect the attention from you. Sure, we're fundraising off of Benghazi, and that's fucked up, but the Democrats fundraise off of Iraq. No, the Democrats tried to change the policy in Iraq. And to do that, yes, you need to get more votes. You need to get your name out there more. You need to raise more money. Absolutely. Yes, it's fine to raise money off of opposition to a war if you're trying to change the policy. It's not fine to raise money off of a situation where you're not saying anything about policy. You're just saying the other side wanted people to die and we don't, give us money. It's absurd. All right. Next. Squeeze in one more before we take our first break here. a man living in the city of Hail, Saudi Arabia, came up with a really good idea to feed needy people. And his purpose was, I want to feed them without making them feel shame. He wanted the beggars to not have to feel like they're lesser human beings or they're some sort of pariahs. So what he did is he installed a refrigerator on the street in front of his house and invited all of his neighbors to donate their extra food so that the hungry people could just come and take a look and grab something and eat it. That's it. Simple idea. And this story is now running on a few different websites. It blew up on Twitter, and everybody was saying, what a great idea. I can't believe nobody ever thought of that before. So I was thinking about it, and two things hit me. Number one, I think Gallup or Pew Research or any other polling organization should do a national poll about this specifically and ask people if they like the idea or if they don't like the idea. And I bet you they absolutely love the idea. And if they do love it, then the second thing, I think Congress should pass a bill that puts one of these charity fridges at all these different federal government buildings across the country. Of course, you know, you can make it dependent upon the weather or whatever. You know, you don't have to do it one specific way, and that's the end of the debate, that's the end of the conversation. Or you know what, you could do it at a state level or a local level or whatever the case is. But it seems to me like this would be a great way to attack the issue of hunger and food insecurity in America, you know? And you could do it multiple ways. So one way you could do it is on the federal level, pass the bill, have it fully funded by tax dollars, and that's it. And it wouldn't even be all that expensive if you really think about it. Just pick out a few government buildings around the U.S., like two or three in each state or something like that in very populated areas. Or you could do it at the state level, fund it through state taxes, or at the local level, you could fund it through local taxes. Or you don't even need to do that. You could just say, you could just pass a bill that says we will pay for the refrigerator itself, the government will pay for the refrigerator itself, and then the community can just come and put their stuff in there, just free, extra food, just put it in there. Or you could, you know, talk to local businesses and say whenever you have extra food, like I'm sure you've seen it, I've seen it, Dunkin' Donuts at the end of the day has some donuts. Not really, they're not bad, maybe they're a little stale or whatever because they've been sitting on the shelf all day, but fuck, people definitely eat that, I'd eat that. So you can make deals with all those places and have them for just, you know, pennies on the dollar, you know, you can fund it and then they could bring, drop the food off there. There's so many smart, easy, simple ways that we can get this accomplished and that we could actually feed people. And understand, food insecurity in the United States of America is a big deal. Like, it's a big problem. People oftentimes, they get, you know, kind of lazy in their thinking and they don't realize that, well, look, I might have it good or some people I know might have it good. But there's so many people who, you know, rely on food stamps, who struggle to feed their kids, struggle to feed themselves. They have, you know, it's hard to keep up with everything. And this is a great way to attack it. But here's the depressing part of the story. There's no chance. I mean, I'm dating myself if I think there's any chance of something this good going into place in America. Because we've done stories recently coming out of, I think one of the Carolinas was one of them and in other places too, where there are churches that do charity, which is great on them, and they always meet in a park like once a week or once every month or something like that, and they just feed the homeless. They have this big thing, you know, all the homeless people come, they feed them, and it's actually like a nice little get-together, right? And what happens is you have the local governments and the state governments trying to force the churches out of doing the charity and feeding people. Now, why would they do that? They do that because, get this, if you have an area where homeless people always come around every once in a while, they're afraid that it's going to drop the property values of the nearby neighborhoods. Amazing how much we don't care about human beings, but you care about property. And these are all people, by the way, usually red states, all the stories that we've done so far on this, red states. So people who consider themselves Christians, they're like, no, we're now going to mandate that the church pays a $500 or a $1,000 fine, which they can't afford, to get a permit so that they could then feed them there, and still we're going to limit the amount of time they could do it then. It's so gross, man. And we would find, you know, objections to this all around the U.S. if we tried to pass something like this. Oh, don't put the refrigerators outside because then you don't want homeless people wandering around the area, do you? You don't want them to affect the property value of the rich people, do you? No, no, they got to stay. They got to know their place. They got to go away. They got to go into the other communities. We don't want them here. It's amazing. And also, the politicians wouldn't do this because they're too busy passing special tax breaks for corporations, and they're too busy giving money to Wall Street, giving money to ExxonMobil and Walmart. Since our Congress is bought, you know, even if they wanted to do well by homeless people, which they don't, but even if they did, they wouldn't be able to do it because if a majority of the American people want it, it doesn't get done anyway. 91% of the American people wanted a universal background check for guns. Dead. Died. 80% want a minimum wage hike. Done. No chance. I can go on and on. All the different things that we want an overwhelming majority and we don't get. So even if we wanted this, you know, the Congress would be like, that's nice, that's nice. Anyway, we need to pass another tax break to HSBC as they do business with Al-Qaeda. So we'll get to that later, maybe. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Pope. The Pope says something good, says something smart, and Rush Limbaugh immediately tells the Pope what Jesus actually wants. We got all that and much more. Stay right there. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back. Without saying that pretty much every time we discuss religion on the show and the Catholic Church, we are slamming it and pointing out all the absurdities and the child fucking, among other things. But today, we actually have to give a little bit of credit to the Pope because he actually got out ahead on an issue in the exact way that I've been screaming at the Democrats to get ahead on the issue of income inequality. So while talking to the UN, Pope Francis yet again went after unfettered capitalism and the, quote, economy of exclusion, as he calls it. But listen to the wording of this next line, because this is exactly right. He said, a more equal form of economic progress can be had through, quote, the legitimate redistribution of economic benefits by the state as well as indispensable cooperation between the private sector and civil society. So do you get what he's saying there? He's saying, yes, I'm in favor of redistribution of wealth. Did I stutter? Now, I want you to compare that with what liberals do here. They're like, wait, us? Me? What? Huh? No, I'm totally against redistribution, and it's terrible and it's wrong, and I'm a right-winger. What, did I say that out loud? I mean, think about what happened with Joe the Plumber and President Obama. What was it, in 2007 at the time, probably before he was president? And what happened? They just completely and utterly backpedaled from the idea that he's in favor of redistribution, you know, when what he should have done is he should have said, yes, I am in favor of it. Let me explain exactly what that means. So point number one is everybody is in favor of redistribution of wealth. Just the question is, to what extent, how much do you want to do redistribution of wealth? If you're against it totally, then you're against the cops, the fire department, the roads, the food inspectors, the military. That is all redistribution of wealth. You wouldn't normally think of it like that, but that's what it is. And point number two is, ask people in a hypothetical world, ask them this question. In a hypothetical world where one person has $12 billion and 99 people have $20,000 each, would you support taking some money from the billionaire to feed the kids of the 99 people? Ask them that question. It's a hypothetical question. In this hypothetical world we live in, there's only 100 people. One of them has $12 billion. Everybody else has $20,000. The 99 people don't have enough money to feed their kids. Do you support taking a little bit of money from the person with $12 billion to feed the kids, yes or no? What's everybody going to say? Yes, I'm not an idiot. I'm not, what am I, a savage? What am I, a Neanderthal? What am I, a heartless bastard? Of course I'm in favor of that. That's insanity. What do you want? Oh, yeah, let the kids starve and die. It's a mockable response to say, yes, I'm against it. Well, guess what? That hypothetical is the real world that we're living in. You know? I mean, think about it. Between Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers and all these other mega donors, even on the left, we don't even need to focus on the right-wing guys. George Soros, you name it, people with billions and billions and billions of dollars. And at the same time that's going on, medical bills is the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States of America. We have people who are food insecure. We have over 10 million people who are working poor people. Do you understand what that means, working poor? They work a full-time job. They don't make enough money to survive. Anybody making minimum wage working full-time, they still need to rely on a social safety net because they don't make enough money to live. All right, now compare that with Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney made $12 million 1 year, $14 million another year, $20 million another year for sitting on his fucking couch. All right, he already has a lot of money and he just invested it and the money piles up on top of it. So if you're not in favor of redistribution, what you're saying is, yes, I would like the lazy guy who sits on his ass to have billions of dollars and the guys that are working to make $20,000 and not survive. So when you frame it like that, it's obvious that everybody's in favor of redistribution. Just, again, to what extent are you in favor of redistribution? Even Ayn motherfucking Rand, Ayn Rand, the darling of the right wing, the classic libertarian, even she said in one of her books that, yes, you do need taxes to fund the police. Because, you know, the police, oh, you need the state there to protect everybody's rights, and the police are how you enforce that, and the court systems too. So, yes, you need minimal taxes for that. Think about that. Even Ayn Rand says, yeah, redistribution, of course, you need police. Duh. Thought meme that's stuck in people's heads and that everybody on the right says and everybody on the left kowtows to of, yeah, no redistribution. Total and utter garbage, total and utter bullshit. It's sad, it's pathetic, and we need to fight back. And it's a guy in a dress who's the head of a cult was the first person to figure out, maybe we should not accept that nonsense. Well, thank you so much for, you know, not getting on it first, progressives out there, specifically elected ones. All right. Let's move on to Rush Limbaugh here because he has something to say about this. So as we just spoke about, Pope Francis gave another speech where he came out swinging in favor of the idea of wealth redistribution, which is a good thing. Again, every single modern nation has wealth redistribution, the cops, the fire department, the food inspectors, the military. It's all wealth redistribution. And even Ayn Rand, everybody's in favor of it. Everybody's in favor of wealth redistribution. Just to what extent are you in favor of it? Well, Rush Limbaugh is the one guy who says, no, this is bad, this is wrong, wealth redistribution is evil. I want one person to be a billionaire and everybody else to make 17 cents. I'm fine with that. If that's how it works out, so be it. So he's going to do what he often does now, and he's going to tell the Pope what Jesus really meant.
The Pope, ladies and gentlemen, is back saying, demanding a legitimate redistribution of wealth. Il Papa, Pope Francis, called today for governments to redistribute wealth to the poor in a new spirit of generosity to help curb the economy of exclusion that is taking hold today. The Pope is describing charity, and that's what the Church is for. And the Vatican is a country. But the Pope is demanding that the United Nations somehow use its influence to get member states to redistribute wealth. That's Marxism. That's socialism. That's not charity. The church is the place where that kind of thing, charity, should come from.
Clearly, Rush Limbaugh knows better than the Pope does on the issue of religion and charity and what Jesus was in favor of. Here's my question for Rush. We already have charity, as you described. That already exists, and it doesn't work. It's not enough. Even with charity, we live in a world where the 85 richest people have more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion. 85 people, more money than 50% of the world. That is with charity. That is with charity. It turns out that system isn't enough. It turns out that system sucks balls. But leave it to Rush Limbaugh to say, no, that's how it should be, and Jesus was not in favor of what you're calling for, Pope Francis. Really? I didn't know Jesus loved capitalism. You know, this is how the right always frames it. Like, oh, yes, Jesus is in favor of the poor. He is in favor of the downtrodden. But only if it's through voluntary, individual, charitable givings, not via governments, not via any collective action. But wait. You just made that up. It's fine to hold that opinion and have that belief and argue for it. Of course, it's a free country. It's a free world. Do that if you want to do that. But to say that that's what Jesus wanted, no, that's what you want. That's not what Jesus wanted. You ever heard this before? Render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's? You know what that's in? That's in the Bible. You know what that means? When Caesar taxes you, pay your taxes. And whatever the government chooses to spend that money on, if they want to set up a social safety net, if they want to fund infrastructure, if they want to do whatever, military, render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's. The idea that Jesus Christ delineated, well, yes, I'm in favor of helping the poor, but first, ladies and gentlemen, let's stick by this capitalist ideology and this capitalist system. Yes, Jesus loved the Koch brothers last time I checked. He's big into Ayn Rand, loves her. So, Rush, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, and it's not Marxism either. Any redistribution of wealth, any government safety nets for the poor is Marxism, then every nation in the world is Marxist. Every nation in the world, because every nation in the world has taxes to fund roads, bridges, food inspectors, you name it. Every nation in the world has some form, some level, even if it's very meager, of a safety net. So by your definition, we are all Marxist. No, Marxist is the government owns everything. They own the means of production, and then they try to distribute it evenly, or they pretend to distribute it evenly. What the Pope is calling for is, hey guys, could we tweak around the edges a little bit to maybe stop some of the wanton inequality and brazen poverty? But even that little vanilla approach, that minor step in the right direction, Rush Limbaugh is like, how dare the Pope call for the stuff that Jesus was in favor of? What a clown this guy is. All right. Next. Let's go to, let me squeeze in this Louis Gohmert story. I wasn't going to do it, but right before I came on air, I decided to do it. How you like me now? Representative Louis Gohmert decided to speak on the House floor about gay people. So I'm sure this is going to be really good. Notice the comparison that he makes about gays and liberals, who he compares them to. And also, notice when he starts talking about psychology and projection, the overwhelming irony of his point.
And people like me, you know, are vilified. Oh, you're hateful, but the people whose show were canceled made what sounded like a very Christian response. Look, we love homosexuals. We love all people. If you don't, then you're not following the teachings of Jesus, to be sure. But it doesn't mean that you have to support, embrace, encourage particular lifestyles that you believe are harmful to the individuals and harmful to the society in general. So it is amazing that in the name of liberality, in the name of being tolerant, this fascist intolerance has arisen. People that stand up and say, you know, I agree with the majority of Americans, I agree with Moses and Jesus, that marriage was a man and a woman. Now all of a sudden, people like me are considered haters, hate mongers, evil, which really is exactly what we've seen, thank you, throughout our history as going back to the days of the Nazi takeover in Europe. What did they do first? They would call people haters, evil, and build up disdain for those people who held those opinions or religious views or religious heritage. And then the next came, well, those people are so evil and hateful, let's bring every book that they've written or has to do with them, and let's start burning the books because we can't tolerate their intolerance. And as shrinks have testified before me during my days as a judge, it's called projecting. Someone that has a characteristic, and to divert condemnation on themselves, they project their characteristic on someone with whom they disagree. So the most intolerant in America, and especially people like we're going to be on the television show before it canceled, people like me, yeah, we'd get upset. We can't stand to see our nation torn apart. Can't stand to see our Judeo-Christian values on which the nation was founded.
All right, let's stop it right there. I think you get the idea. Fascist intolerance. There's a fascist intolerance coming from the people who want tolerance. Wait, what? So gays and liberals and people in favor of the LGBT community, we are the ones with fascist intolerance? Okay, hold on, wait a second. Gay people can only get married in 17 states. The majority of the states in the United States of America do not allow gay marriage. In 29 states, you could be fired just because you're gay. Never mind, when we spread it out to the world, it's overwhelming how bad the situation is. 83 countries, it's illegal to be gay. They could just throw you in jail for being gay. 7 countries, they kill you for being gay. So you can clearly see how the people who are concerned about that and they want to change it and bring equality, those people are fascist and they're intolerant. Wow. Wow. Now, again, the best part. When he starts talking about projection, you're talking about projection as you are doing projection. You just called people in favor of the gay community and fighting for equal rights. You just compared them to Nazis. You compared them to Nazis. Meanwhile, you're the one that's saying, I want to take away their rights. I don't want there to be gay marriage. I don't want to give them equality. I still want to let business owners fire somebody if they're gay. I don't want to give them, full citizenship. I want them to remain second-class citizens. I want them to be discriminated against. And clearly you could see that the other side are Nazis because they disagree with me. Oh my God, Louis. He really is one of the dumbest people in America. And then also just blatant factual errors that the majority of Americans are in favor of one man, one woman. When was the last time you looked at a poll? 2008? Look at the most recent ones. 58%, 59% of the American people in favor of gay marriage. And then also burning books. Whoever brought up burning books? Have you ever seen a group of gay people or a group of progressives dragging out Rush Limbaugh books and Mark Levin books and shit like that and throwing them in a pile and burning them? No. No, you haven't seen that. Don't be ridiculous. See, the way that Louis Gohmert defines rights, the way that he defines equality and justice is if you do whatever he wants and that's it. So to him, rights are his rights to shut out your rights. See, to him, he has the right to deny you equal rights. And the second you say, whoa, 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 no you don't, what the fuck are you talking about? You're 100% wrong. You don't have the right to deny them rights. He goes, oh, you're fascist. You're intolerant. You're a Nazi. No, no. Look, we don't make Nazi analogies or comparisons unless they're 100% rock solid. So I'm not going to be the smaller man here and call him a Nazi. But here's what's for sure. What he's in favor of is quite fascist. Taking away your rights because he disagrees with them? That's kind of one of the definitions of that. Squeeze in one more here before we take a break. Then we should have a caller, I believe, Secular Talk member coming up after the break. All right. A high school student in Texas decided to protest government policies by not standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Mason Michalik said, quote, I'm really tired of our government taking advantage of us. Well, after he said that, of course, the principal was angry. The principal was not a fan of his move. So she said, quote, this is my classroom. This is the principal's request. You're going to stand. So she ended up sending letters to his house, suspending him for 2 days because he wouldn't stand for the pledge. And every day that he didn't stand, he would get another 2 days suspension. So what was his response? He basically said, okay, go ahead, suspend me. I don't care. Quote, I think it's time people start doing something for themselves and stop just talking, taking whatever is handed to them. I'm angry and frustrated and annoyed that they would try to write me up for something that I have the right to do. So who's right in this case? Well, actually, it's frustrating how black and white the situation really is because, quote, in 1943, the Supreme Court in the case of West Virginia State Board of Education versus Barnett ruled that persons may not be compelled to stand and observe the pledge, writing, quote, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion, or force citizens to confess by word or act their faith therein. Man, I love that quote. The principal could not be more wrong. See, what's going on here is it's obvious that the principal just wants total authority and conformity and order and obedience and groupthink, you know. And she also had a quote that was like, he refuses to stand for the Texas Pledge, the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States, and our moment of silence. And she just went through a list of shit that they make these kids do without ever even reflecting on, do they even know what it is? Do they even, you know, care about the details of what they're standing for and, you know, what they're doing this sheepish act for? No, didn't pay any mind to that point. It was just like, he's not falling in line and doing as I say. Yeah, but we live in the United States of America. Here, I want to make a comparison here so you understand what I think is the proper context and the proper lens to view this through. Imagine looking at a picture of Saudi Arabia in a classroom there, and all the kids are standing up and they're holding a specific pose, whatever their pose is, whether it's bowing to head or, you know, some sort of hand symbol or whatever, some gesture, and they're standing there and they're singing along to their national song with the picture of the Ayatollah at the front of the room and the flag there, and everybody's just unanimity and uniformity in what they're saying. And if we saw a video of that, we would be like, holy shit, they're indoctrinating their youth. If we saw a picture of that, and we have, out of North fucking Korea, it's like, ring the alarm bells, let's set up the missile defenses, these guys are absolute lunatics, look at what they're doing. But for whatever reason, we're totally incapable of turning that lens around to us and going, okay, let's look at ourselves through the eyes of a foreigner or an alien, space alien who would come down and look at this and see what's going on. What would the reaction be? They'd be like, what the fuck? Really? This is how you guys think? So you don't think. You all just fall in line and recite the thing that the dear leader tells us to say this and that. Look, the year is 2014, man. If we actually want to stand up for American constitutional principles, we should absolutely get rid of the pledge and get rid of all these things that are just mindless conformity ways of getting things started, or like prayer or the Pledge of Allegiance. This is all mindless nationalism and blind patriotism and silliness. No, we should be fostering people to be strong, independent, rational thinkers. You know, we should make people in America actually use their mind and not have this sheepish approach to life. Again, that's totally against the founding principles of the U.S. To have this conformity and have the pledge or have school prayer, have any of that stuff, that's more in line with a tyranny. That's more in line with a fascist state. That's more in line with places that aren't free. If we actually want to embrace constitutional principles and freedom, we should get rid of that. This kid is totally right, and I actually think in many ways it's kind of a heroic move. All right, let's take a break. We come back, have a lot of great stuff. Don't go anywhere, man. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back.
I just want to show you you want you. You should love me, love you. Let me be the one to give you everything you want and need. Oh, that is good love and protection. Oh, make me your selection. Show you the way love's supposed to be. Baby, you still love me.
But I don't need a I can get you right back in. If soul is searching, I'll go. Then I can have you for sure. Then you'll be loving me, holding me, kissing me. Oh, girl, don't tell me what I'm feeling. It's make-believe. I cherish if I lose a second chance with you. I wouldn't know what to do. I'll probably check myself in some kind of clinic. I couldn't be alone because without you I'm sick. Here's my wish list. I will create a heart-shaking love. I'll take your disbelief all the way I have won. I don't need a lot of wishes because I'll be okay if I get one. If I had one wish.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I need everybody to go ahead and show some love to a brand new member to the show and a first-time caller. I'm talking about Andrew Goosens. Am I saying that last name right, Andrew, or no?
You're saying that perfect.
And should I call you Drew or Andrew?
Andrew works.
Andrew, okay. So what's going on, man? First of all, let me thank you for becoming a member of the show. I always appreciate that. I know I got a lot of people in the chat there right now. Some of them are members. Of course, Lilith is in there right now. Got a bunch of other people. If you heard me talking about it yesterday, it's kind of amazing that, people will, they become members and they get all the perks. Like, this is one right here. You're on Fridays talking to me and we could have conversations about all these different issues and stuff. But, like, a lot of people join and then they're just like, no, I just want to give you money. And I'm like, what the, really? I'm honored by that. But anyway, let's jump into some interesting stuff. You were talking to me on Twitter the other day, and you had a few things on your mind. So go ahead, shoot from the hip, man. Don't be nervous. The audience is great.
All right. First, can I give a little background on myself?
Sure. Go right ahead.
All right. I used to be a Pentecostal Christian. I was for about a year and a half, and I did mostly because my girlfriend was. And, hey, they were good people, like you say a lot, so I thought they were right, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. I just, they were really weird. They'd get headaches and accuse me of judging them, but in the process, they'd be judging me by doing that. They'd
That's
say it was
usually the
trick.
Spirits.
Yeah. I realized it was a cult about a year and a half into it, and it was only 13 members, so obviously it was, but I don't know.
I'm already fascinated, man. First of all, I'm sure we could talk about this alone for an hour because I know from just reading all this different stuff that as far as different Christian denominations goes, Pentecostal is one of the craziest because they do the talk, speaking in tongues and all that stuff.
Yep.
Am I right?
They are.
So
you are right.
So did you have to kind of do that to fit in and become part of the thing?
The first time I did, I definitely felt like I was just doing it to fit in.
And then eventually, does it become some sort of psychological trick you end up playing on
yeah.
yourself, or you
yep.
feel like you're connecting to
something? I feel
like
you're just in
right?
denial the whole time, just mindlessly believing in something that isn't true.
And in conversations with your girlfriend, did you get the sense that, like, the rot was already deep in the sense that she, like, really felt like she was connecting with something and really felt like she was, you know, actually right about these things?
Yes. She never cut her hair, not once. She always
wore skirts. Is that one of the things they teach? That's one of the things
yep.
they teach?
Oh,
I didn't know
like
that.
In Corinthians, it says a woman must be covered, as you know. And
oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I was involved with that for a little bit, but about a year and a half after I got out, I saw one of your YouTube videos. At first, I still kind of sort of believed in God, maybe not the Bible literally like they do, but
right.
I found some of the religious stuff offensive to begin with, but I just kept on listening because you were giving me facts and throwing them at me. And, hey, I now call myself an agnostic atheist like you, because
that's
like in 1876, I wasn't alive. When I die, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah, and look, to be clear, that's my guess. That's my opinion. Nobody knows. Nobody has any fucking idea what happens when we die.
That's the only
it's just
thing
the
that
default
makes sense
in my head, you know? Yeah, exactly. It's I call it the default position, like the null hypothesis it's called in science, where it's like, well, we're not really sure, so we're just going to assume the same as before we were fucking born. But I'm curious, so you said you got into it when you were going out with this girl, or was it before that? What were you raised in? Were you raised in a religion at all or no? Because I was raised Catholic.
I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of strayed away from that, didn't really believe much. And then I had this girlfriend, and she was my girlfriend really before she even talked about it that much. But she would obviously hint on it sometimes, and she lured me right in, and I followed. And I had a great time. Like,
that's such a trick, man, because, look, that's one of my biggest weaknesses. Like,
yep.
like a beautiful woman who I'm attracted to who's like,
uh-huh.
no, it's cool. We could hang out, and we can totally be friends and maybe fool around and everything. Just do me a favor and drink this Kool-Aid.
yep.
I mean, at certain times, I'm like, what flavor is it? Maybe I'll try some. Just a little bit.
yeah. Actually, towards the end, they kicked me out because they thought I had evil spirits on me. So that was what did it for me. So
that's fucking fascinating. That for people listening to the show who might not, I don't know how long everybody's been listening, but I have like a little bit of a background in psychology. It was what I was going to major in before I went to political science. So I'm fascinated by that stuff also. And when you look at like the way religions act and cults act and everything. It's just such a fascinating psychological phenomenon that, in my opinion, it's kind of like a throwback to, like, primitive times, like ape times, when there's this rigid hierarchy and you have, like, the charismatic leader who kind of shows the way and then everybody just follows regardless of what their own eyes tell them. They've done studies where if you set up a line of people and, like, four or five people say, yes, that thing you're showing me is red, even though the thing is actually yellow, that by the time you get to the last person who's not in on the little trick, they just go along with everybody else. So they
yep,
actually go
like
with
sheep.
What – exactly. They go with what people say as opposed to what their eyes say because they don't want to feel like the odd man out. And then later on they'll find a way to rationalize it and find a way to, well, at least I fit in, this and that. So it's almost like the social support itself is the ends that people care about. And they throw out the truth. They don't give a shit about what's actually going on. They're just like, as long as I can fit in and kind of go through this without hitting any bumps in the road, I'll be okay. But obviously, people can be led into doing terrible things when that's the way that you're approaching life from an intellectual perspective.
Yep.
So let's move on to some other stuff. I know you said a whole bunch of stuff you sent me piqued my interest. That obviously was on the top of the list there with the Pentecostal stuff. But
yeah.
What else was on your mind?
I heard something on the radio. My dad's one of the eight people that listen to Republican talk radio. And I was in the car with him, and I heard Mark Levin say about 7 million people signed up for Obamacare. And he said, I'll be fair and say that 6 million of them lost their original health insurance and had to sign up for it. And he's like, That's only 1 million people. Obamacare doesn't work. And they try to take it away, trying to take away our freedom. Look, the 1 million people, regardless, that is a success. I mean...
And by the way, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can guarantee you that Mark Levin is making shit up. I can guarantee that.
Oh,
if I were to look it up, yeah, certainly not.
I'm just saying
true,
what he says. I mean, he's okay on certain aspects, like marijuana. He's for that. But
yeah,
not
see,
the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, it's interesting because my dad passed away a while ago, but when he never really was too much into politics, he kind of had that mentality of, like, fuck them all the politicians. But,
yeah.
Like, whenever I did hear him say anything when it comes to politics, it was always, like, a hybrid of, like, pseudo-conspiracy stuff, but also, like, right-wing talking points, and it was just a weird kind of mix. But what I find is that we're seeing a lot of that. Like, even people who listen to, like, right-wing talk radio or Fox News or whatever, even on the social issues, they can't keep them. Like, those guys can't keep them. Because on the social
mm-hmm.
issues, eventually everybody kind of goes, yeah, fuck it, it's just weed and fuck it. If they want to get married, well, who cares? They're gay people, they're not hurting anybody, who cares? And that's why you're seeing a swing
exactly.
in the polls. Yeah, but it's true, though, for whatever reason, the stuff on economics sticks. And I think a lot of it, honestly, a lot of it has to do with ethnocentrism. Because what a lot of old white people think, my father included, like, the idea was that, oh, our tax dollars are being stolen by lazy black people who
yep.
they don't want to work and, you know, I'm funding them and I'm this hard-working, productive citizen and look at what these moochers are doing. But, of course, if you look at the federal budget, you don't even, like, that's the thing that's amazing is that even
yeah.
the most basic amount of research of just pull up the federal budget, look at where all the money goes. You find immediately that social safety net programs and welfare programs, it is the tiniest percentage of the budget. Like,
right
it is nothing. Military is ridiculous. It's the biggest thing. And then, of course, you have Social Security and Medicare, which does make up a large part of it, but those are earned benefit programs, meaning everybody pays into them and then everybody takes out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of these things where it's such good propaganda that worked. That's the point. You know,
yeah.
Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, everything I say negative about those guys, you always need to keep in mind that they've been at it for so long that they have convinced this older generation, specifically of white men for whatever reason, that, you know, fear the poor people. Not, hey, fear the rich people who are ripping you off. And by the way, we can prove that between the Wall Street bailouts and between – you know, the $4 billion subsidy to ExxonMobil and the billions of
mm-hmm.
dollars in subsidies to Walmart and all that stuff. And they just, for whatever reason, they can't snap out of that and actually look at the data that shows them, oh, actually who you should fear is the really rich guy in the suit and tie, not the, you know, the black guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's who you should fear.
What my dad says is if you're not a liberal by age 20, you have no heart. If you're not a Republican by age 40, you have no brain.
That's right, ma'am. I heard that. That's a very, very classic quote a lot of people have said. My uncle used to say that
yeah.
to me. But then also that same uncle, this is true story, everybody. Swear to God, I know it's ironic, I don't believe in God, but it's a phrase, you know what I'm saying. The same uncle that said that quote to me, many times he said that to me. He also is the same guy who said to me, you know what I think the problem with this country is? In the 1970s, God took his hand off the nation.
I mean, that's
How
not far
that?
Out for me because I used to be Pentecostal, but I know what you mean.
That's what. And I'm sitting there. I mean, I was probably like 18 when the guy said it, and I'm like,
yeah.
How do I respond to this? Because at that point, nothing I say is going to make a difference. If you are inclined to believe that, there's nothing I could say that tells you you're wrong.
I mean, it's just superstition.
Exactly. So I ended up saying something silly that, like, I mean, I don't think it's silly, but of course he would. I was like, how can you know that? Like, how can you prove that? And, you know, obviously he's like, oh, that's what's happening. God took his hand off the nation. And also that's the same guy who also told me that, oh, sure, you're liberal now, but then when you start making money, you'll vote Republican because you want to keep more of your money. And keep in mind, this is a guy who made less than $50,000 his entire life. Like every year he was.
So he bought into all the propaganda about Republicans.
Bought into all the propaganda. He had no idea. He's voting for people who keep his taxes higher than the Democrats do. And it just, it's sad to me. It's so sad to me. And a lot of it goes back to, I didn't say this yesterday in, when I was doing the 500th show thing, but there's another book, my second favorite book of all time, and I recommend this to everybody if they haven't read it yet. Thomas Frank, What's the Matter with Kansas? It's a book about why people vote against their own economic interest, specifically in the deep red states in the middle of the country. It is a fascinating book. He goes into great detail about how most of it comes down to religion. Most of it comes down to the idea that, you know, even if I'm getting fucked over right now, even if shit's not going well, at least I know that this person who I vote for, this Republican, agrees with me in principle on the biggest question, which is Jesus and God and Christianity.
Yeah.
You know?
What was the name of that book again?
It's called What's the Matter with Kansas by a guy named Thomas Frank. Great book, great book. I should actually, just came to me now, random thought, but I should probably do an entire show or do an entire segment where I lay out my favorite books. Everybody sees on YouTube, you can see the books behind me.
Yep.
What a lot of people don't know is that's actually in loose order of my most favorite to my least favorite.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of I'm that kind of a loser where I would set it up and be like, all right, guys, let's spend this afternoon picking out my favorite books. And I put
it
in order.
Play golf too, so.
Yes, that too. Quite a Republican mentality. It's hard for me. I got to not talk politics on the course because everybody will be like, you know how they are. Yeah. That's how it is. But I'm not playing these, you know, big time country clubs or anything. I'm a regular guy playing private, public courses, semi public courses, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But so anything else on your mind, Drew, or? You got everything off your chest. And by the way, I'm super, super excited to have you on as a member because now you know, I was talking to Lilith earlier. The lines are just open most Fridays, so you guys could call up. Just obviously, if I got like 900 things to get to, I got to try to limit the calls as much as I can, but I still take them, no doubt. But so I'm definitely excited to have you on. So anything else you want to share with anybody?
Not much more to say today. I'll write some stuff down for next time. Wasn't too prepared today.
No, it was a great conversation. And actually, as long as you don't mind, at some point in the future, I'd love to, you know, get into more detail about the whole Pentecostal thing because I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by it.
I mean, I was there for a year and a half. I mean, I got a lot.
You know what it is? Just speaking from my own perspective, and again, we can get into this more later and you could give me more details, but I know that if I was in a similar situation, I honestly would have done it just to try to get into her pants.
Yeah,
so
pretty much.
That was the motivating factor?
Well, that was the motivation, but then I started slowly getting brainwashed into it type thing, you know?
Yeah, I do. It's like you started out as...
Like listening to your show.
Like, right.
The exact way of how I was brainwashed on your show. I wasn't brainwashed. I was brain cleaned, like you cleansed me.
I think I'm going to use that in the future because that's probably one of the best compliments the show's ever gotten. That I don't feel like you're brainwashing. I feel like you're brain cleaning.
Yeah.
Love that. Anybody listening right now that has a Twitter, please put that in quotes. Put Andrew Goossens and send it to me. So I could favorite it immediately. All right, Andrew, it was great talking to you, buddy. Really appreciate you becoming a member. Look forward to talking to you a lot more from here on out. And by the way, everybody else who's a member, like I said, we got probably about 30 or 40 members now to the show, and only 3 or 4 of them like to come on air, which, again, I find fascinating. But look,
I've only heard Lilith on air.
Yeah, Lilith, Sarah Creighton comes on air a lot. Our economic advisor, who you can follow on Twitter, @austerity_sucks, he comes on every once in a while. Alex Young has been on a little bit, but just to fill in for somebody else. So, but again, all the members, if you want to come on, the lines are always open on Friday, so you can think about it. But hey, I'm not complaining. If you just want to keep giving me money, there's nothing wrong with that. all right, Andrew, appreciate it, man.
All right.
All right, we'll talk to you. Have a good one.
You too, sir.
All right, guys, and just to throw it out there, if you are interested in becoming a member and having conversations on air on Friday and airing everything out, or just being the fucking saints that randomly donate money to me, which is amazing that they do that, but again, I love them to death, SecularTalkRadio.com, you could check it out. You could read about the show there, have a bunch of stuff there, and you could read about the perks of membership. All right, let me squeeze in one more story before we take our final break, and then we'll come back, and I'll have a fucking marathon to get through to until the end of the show. So let's let me do the Supreme Court prayer response, because you guys will get a kick out of this. All right. Somebody came up with a brilliant way to respond to the recent Supreme Court ruling that prayer is allowed now to open government meetings. In my opinion, it's a crazy violation of the First Amendment and the Establishment Clause. But a guy named Chaz Stevens, who has made headlines in the past too because he put up an 8-foot-tall Festivus pole made of beer cans and he put it next to a nativity scene. Well, this guy decided to open a meeting with a satanic prayer. I love this. It's such a clever way to get back. He said, quote, "Think of all the people he's in charge of," talking about Satan. "Do you want to be stuck listening to harp music in the afterlife? Hell no. I want to drink beer and hang with hookers. I just want equal billing. We allow various religious nutjobs to give a prayer. They pray to Jesus, who is make-believe, God, who is make-believe. Why not Satan, who is make-believe? Why discriminate against one make-believe God over another? Satan and I are being circumvented. The city of Deerfield Beach has once again declared war on religion, and this time it's Satanism." So keep in mind, legally, he is 100% correct. Actually, constitutionally speaking, he's 100% correct. And according to Justice Kennedy, he actually highlights this in the majority decision. He said, quote, "To hold that invocations must be non-sectarian would force the legislatures that sponsor prayers and the courts that are asked to decide these cases to act as supervisors and censors of religious speech." So in other words, he's saying, for the government to say you can't do prayers of specific denominations or specific religions, that would be the government restricting freedom of speech. So therefore, you have to allow the prayers of different belief systems and religions and denominations. So what's Stephen saying in response? Fine, if you want to play that game, let's play that game. I want to do a prayer for Satanism. So either you allow me to start a government meeting by praying to Satan, or you're violating the Constitution. Pick, which one do you want? It's such a clever move, man. It's so clever. So what I want everybody to do is I want people, part of state governments or local governments around the country, I want you to do this exact same thing, except you pick the religion. You know, if you want to go up and do a prayer in favor of Pastafarianism, the flying spaghetti monster, please go right ahead and do it. Don't let anybody stop you. It is your constitutional right. We just learned it. This is what the Supreme Court said. It's your constitutional right to go up there and pray to Pastafarianism before we talk about serious government matters. It's your right to go up there and pray to Xenu. It's your right to go up there and pray to the Greek gods or the Roman gods or to aliens, space aliens. I guess Xenu would qualify as an alien too, right, I think? You can pray to whoever you want. You can go up there and say, I'm praying to the religion of your mother's ass. Whatever you want to do, man, the Supreme Court opened up the floodgates, so now they're going to get exactly what they asked for. Because obviously the reality of the Constitution is that you can't establish a religion. Okay, so when you allow Christian prayer, which is what they did in the case of Greece, New York, upstate New York, now they've opened the floodgates where they say, okay, there can be Christian prayer everywhere. But if you do that, then you're basically establishing Christianity as the state religion, which is unconstitutional. So if you're going to do that, fine, we can all play that game. Just like if you put up a Christmas tree in a government building, you also have to allow stuff for the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Muslims and everybody, right? Because it's a government. It's supposed to represent everybody, not just the dominant religion. Same thing, man. Now any prayer has to go. So you guys called it upon yourself. You can't bitch and moan when Satanists start praying, and I hope they do in large numbers so you understand just how wrong you were in terms of the Constitution. All right, let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll have a lot of stuff, including our favorite fundamentalist, Gordon Klingenschmidt, has a new theory about Adam and Eve, because, of course, they were real people. And then North Korean state media releases an article about President Obama, the most racist thing you've ever heard in your life, makes Cliven Bundy look like Tupac Shakur. All right, maybe not that far, but it's bad. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Your jeans and your old black hat. Cause I wanna, they look good on me. You're never gonna get them back.
Guys, welcome back to the show. Somebody, I don't know if they're listening now, but before the show, somebody was asking me why I'd never run for office. And I said, because I fucking make dick jokes and call people idiots. Never mind the fact that on many occasions I've sat here talking to you guys and I've gone into specifics about the porn that I masturbate to. Do you think that guy usually would win the presidency or win some sort of position in office? Like, yeah, I'm going to vote for the guy who likes watching big booty bitches. Can we vote for that guy? Let's vote for the guy who, when you type you into his search engine, YouTube is not the first thing that comes up. Let's do that. It wouldn't happen, man. By the way, I have no interest in doing that. What I'm doing, I feel like this is the best job in the history of the world. And what am I going to do? Drop this to have, like, responsibilities to thousands of people? I couldn't do that. Not for me, man. My job is to bark at people and tell them why they're stupid as I tell you what porn I watch. That's what I do. Anyway, speaking of really, really creepy things, let's go to Gordon Klingenschmidt. Our favorite fundamentalist, Gordon Klingenschmidt, has a new theory about Adam and Eve that he'd like to share with us. Listen.
There are certain weeds in the garden, even in the Garden of Eden, that were forbidden by God. And I'm going to throw out an interesting hypothesis here. Everyone sees the image of Adam and Eve in the garden, right? And there's the snake who tempted Eve, and Eve bit the apple, and she handed it to Adam, and he bit the apple. Here's my hypothesis. Everyone thinks it's an apple. I think apples are healthy. I don't think it was an apple at all. The Bible doesn't use the word apple. The Bible does use the word forbidden weed. So here's my hypothesis. Maybe it was marijuana. How do you know? And biblical scholars may research this and may dispute this. How do you know that the serpent didn't give pot to Eve and say, go ahead, in the day that you eat this, you're not going to die. The fact is, you are going to die.
This guy, man, this guy, he's supposedly a Bible literalist. He has no idea what's in the Bible. So get this. As I'm watching this earlier, this was on Right Wing Watch, I'm hearing this, I start laughing, and then I'm like, okay, let me do what any normal person would do and check. So I type Adam and Eve story into Google, click like the first or second link, which is, you know, it's basically the Bible online, the actual passages from the Bible. It doesn't say forbidden weeds. It says fruit. It says fruit time and time and time again in the Bible. Weed isn't a fruit, you dipshit. But, like, even the most basic shit, Gordon Klingenschmidt fumbles the facts. That's the most basic thing. Look, if that's your feeling, oh, well, I think that in Adam and Eve with the eating the fruit, they really meant eating weed. You didn't bother to look it up? You didn't bother to go to Google? You didn't bother to check? You didn't, before you go out there and say these things and make a fucking ass of yourself in front of the six people that listen to your TV show and watch, you didn't bother to check? Like, it's not that hard. Like, I don't know what it is, but there's something about these conservative Christians, they disagree with the idea of research, even the premise of research. They're like, no, I'd rather just make things up as I go along. But that doesn't mean that you're right. You need to actually verify the shit that you say. But then again, I'm screaming it fundamentalists to fact check. If they were fact checkers, they wouldn't be fundamentalists in the first place. But we all know why he's doing this, too. He's trying to demonize marijuana. Like, he's just the typical classic right-wing conservative Christian ideologue, where, like, you know, just all the things they believe in, he believes in, and one of the things they believe in is, we're anti-drug, we're anti-fun, don't ever take a pill, don't ever smoke anything, don't ever take a hit. We're against all kinds of fun that might actually lead you to open your mind. By the way, that's one of the things that's really interesting about marijuana as a drug. Like, I've mentioned on the show many times about my experience with it and how most of the times I got paranoid, and so it wasn't my drug of choice necessarily. But what I find is across the board with people who smoke weed is they say it really does, like, kind of open up your mind and make you think about different things, and it leads your brain down these different and interesting paths. And it's like a smart drug, I'd call it, you know. It's not just like, you know, cocaine or Adderall would be, which is an upper, or like Xanax or I don't know, Valium would be, which is a downer. It's like you can get giddy at first and really happy, and then it'll calm you down, but it'll also make you think, and it'll also make your brain kick into high gear. And one of the connections that I got from watching this is, how right in line is that with the way that fundamentalists think? Avoid any substance that would open your reality and expand your horizons. Avoid anything that's outside of your comfort zone, you know? Avoid anything that might actually make you be promiscuous. So certain drugs, of course, would up your libido and make you more horny and make you feel more sympathetic and connected with people. Avoid anything that takes you outside of what you should be doing, which is pure blind obedience to your religion. It's such a sad existence, man. It's such a sad existence. It's so transparent. He's just trying to slam marijuana, and he did it by invoking Adam and Eve. And also, he says it as if it's like a factual conversation, like, other people think it's an apple. I think it was weed that Adam and Eve were talking about and that they were involved with and everything. Well, I think that there was no fucking Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, that's 6,000 years ago with the Garden of Eden and everything. We know that that's not true. We know that as a matter of fact. The world is 4.54 billion years old, not 6,000. You want to talk about missing the mark? 6,000 versus 4.54 billion? You're so far off. You're so far off. 6,000 years ago, humans were relatively modern. You know? Like, we have trees that are older than 6,000 years. And they're like, no, that's how old the world is, and the world started with two people. So the whole idea of evolution, he's just like, no, it's Adam and Eve. No evolution, even though there's a fucking mountain of evidence. For fuck's sake, we have the same number of hair follicles on our body as apes do. Is that a coincidence? Is it a coincidence that we all defecate? Is that a coincidence? Is it a coincidence that our DNA structure is, what, 99% alike? At least it's probably even more than that. Is that a coincidence? So everybody, you should probably take your science ideas from Gordon Klingenschmidt and your ideas on the Bible. It turns out Adam and Eve, not only are they anti-fruit and anti-apple and anti-knowledge. Remember, they ate from the tree of knowledge. So God's admitting in the Bible, yes, we're against knowledge. We want you to not think and follow us. But also they were anti-drug. All right, next. All right, let's talk about North Korea. There's an article that came out of North Korea state media, which I know is like saying there's an article that came out of Satan's asshole after he had diarrhea. But the article is quite possibly the most racist thing in human history. Like I said before the break, this shit makes Cliven Bundy look like a civil rights leader. So Matt Wilstein at Mediaite writes, quote, most articles published by North Korea's state-run news agency are translated into English, but not this one. This week, blogger Josh Stanton uncovered a racist screed posted on May 2nd by the Korea Central News Agency that uses a wide variety of viciously racist terms to describe President Barack Obama. So here are some of the lines from that piece. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up. Quote, "It's certain that Obama has slipped out of the body of a monkey, and he should live as a monkey in an African natural zoo licking the breadcrumbs thrown by spectators. He is a crossbreed, which is unclear blood, and he still has the figure of monkey while the human race has evolved through millions of years." Damn, man. Look, it's hard to get me to be, like, uber patriotic and, like, defend America 100%, like it's my son or something. But I'm about to do that right now. I mean, North Korea is going to talk shit. Look, America has, we have many problems. That's a given. But compared to North Korea, we are positively utopian. Now, supposedly a milder version of the same article was translated into English by the North Korean media, this one calling Obama a, quote, wicked black monkey. So as you can see, it's softer. He's just a wicked black monkey. So look, here's the thing. Why am I even bothering to talk about this? Because we all know that North Korea is crazy, right? Well, the reason why I brought it up is because of this one gigantic chunk of irony that I couldn't get out of my head that I think it's worth mentioning. North Korea, if you really think about it, is the last country on Earth that functions most like a bunch of fucking monkeys. I mean that. I'm not just saying that as like a, you know, a put down and like, oh, let's go after them and fuck them and just like being disrespectful. No, think about it, seriously. North Korea is, it's like a state religion. Like you have Kim Jong-un is a godly figure before it was Kim Jong-il, and this whole family has been passed down. They're viewed as only semi-human, all the propaganda that comes out of there, and it's like, oh, he shot a 20 for 18 holes of golf or whatever it was. This was about Kim Jong-il. I mean, they just all stuff that's totally shamelessly made up, and he cures diseases and does all these things. And that mentality and that kind of system where there's no education, it's all propaganda, your whole life is just you have to do exactly what the dear leader says, and the entire country is starving. There's nothing but poverty. You don't even have fucking electricity, okay? But meanwhile, this parody of a human being that's the king, that's the leader, that's the dictator, he's got everything he's ever wanted. You know, they import a tremendous amount of Hennessy, they have these movie theaters, they have the internet, meanwhile, it's banned in the rest of the country. He kills his uncle because his uncle dared to disagree with him on certain things. And why is that exactly like monkeys? It's a system known as dominance hierarchy, where you have, oh, the person with the guns and the might, they are the strongest one. They are the leader. Let's all fall in line and just do exactly what they say and not question it. And let's tell stories about how great the leader is and all this stuff. A system where you have a central leader who rules like an idiot and who is an idiot and he's no better than anybody else, but he has this grasp on the population because he's vicious, because he's brutal, okay? That's like a fucking monkey. That's like monkeys. That kind of a system is very, very primitive, okay? Say what you want. I mean, the great Winston Churchill quote about democracy, it's the worst form of government except all others. Say what you want about America, and there's a lot to say. Say what you want about Europe and all the other modern industrial nations, Australia. I mean, we go down the list, Canada. We all have our problems. We all have our faults. But we're not fucking North Korea. We are a lot more evolved, right, and advanced. But meanwhile, what's he saying? Oh, look at these Americans, and look at Obama. He's like a monkey. He's not evolved. He's not advanced. Says the person with the most brutal, repressive, grotesque, idiotic government on planet Earth. Like, the reason why I find this story amazing is that you're guilty of everything that you're saying about Obama. Like, you're the one that's acting like a monkey. You're the one that's like, and by the way, literally, people from North Korea, because they're malnourished, they're shorter than people from South Korea and from the industrialized world. They're shorter. They have smaller bone structures. So they're literally de-evolved. But he's going to write an article, and in North Korea they're going to talk, oh, yeah, Obama, he's de-evolved. He's like an ape. He's like a monkey. You're like that. God, they're so stupid it hurts, man. They're the hermit kingdom. Please, you're a joke. You're a joke in around the world. And again, I'll say it again, America, we're nowhere near perfect. I hate our imperialism. I hate our high rate of poverty for the modern industrial world. Our education system sucks. Our healthcare system sucks. There's a laundry list of shit to go after, and I do. But you are way worse. You know what this story is? This story is the equivalent of a one-eyed, one-legged, Down syndrome midget kindergartner stepping to Mike Tyson in his prime and saying, what now, punk bitch? You want to fight? You want to go for it? It's like, please, you're way out of your league. Sit down, shut up, know your role. All right, next. That got under my skin. I don't know why. You know what it is? The fucking North Korea is so arrogant. They're so arrogant in their idiocy. Like, they're fucking walking around like, oh, yeah, let me tell you something about South Korea. Let me tell you something about America. Fuck you. Fucking piece of shit. Right now, the conservatives are listening going, all right, Kyle, you tell them, lib talker. All right. More Republican ads? Do I have that for you? I think I do. Yes, I do. We have yet another Republican ad that insults your intelligence. This is Tea Party candidate Rob Manis of Louisiana running against Senator Mary Landrieu. It's a political ad where he wrestles an alligator.
I'm Rob Manis, and here in Louisiana, you'll learn to be tough. One moment of weakness, and the alligators can eat you alive. So when I get to Washington, I'll stand up to the big spender. I'll fight to repeal Obamacare, and I'll protect our gun rights. I'm Colonel Rob Manis, and I approve this message because Louisiana needs a senator that will stand up to the career politicians and the alligators.
I like guns. I hate Obamacare. Vote for me. I wrestle alligators, bitch. God, they really do. All the right-wingers in these states... that should insult your intelligence. Like, you're not outraged by that. You're not offended by that. This is what they think of you. I don't know, run an ad with me and an alligator or something, and people will go, oh, I like the guy with the alligator commercial. That's nice right there, man. That's depressing. It is. They're looking down on you. They're saying you're too stupid to understand the issues. I don't know, just put an alligator in there. I'll wrestle it or some shit. And, I mean, what do you say? I like guns and fuck Obamacare. Oh, how original for a Republican. I mean, we already have the most lax gun laws in all of the modern world. And you're like, we got a lot of mass shootings, but I like guns. So, yeah, fuck it. Let's have the mass shootings continue because I like guns. Vote for me. What a deep policy idea. Let's continue to have the casualty count rise. That's what I'm in favor of. Oh, you must be a fucking genius then. And let's repeal Obamacare. Okay, yeah, let's go back to the system where 45,000 people died every year because they don't get basic care. Let's bring back pre-existing conditions. That's better, right? There, you know, toddlers are getting too much care now if they get leukemia. I mean, let's go back to the days where, oh, sorry, you had a pre-existing condition, little one. Sorry, we're not going to cover you. Stand up for those insurance companies, man. Keep fighting for them. What a gross political party we're talking about here. And they're getting... so bad, the ads, and they're going for the lowest common denominator so much that the next ad, they should just be like, you know, a fucking just a 20-second camera shot of a NASCAR track, and just a Republican pops up at the end and goes, I like NASCAR, vote for me. Or just a politician drinking Budweiser. I drink Bud. I like Jack Daniels. Vote for me. We're not that far off from that. Really think about it. Or guns, just show a fucking still frame of a gun, and then at the end of it say, vote for me, I approve this message. People go, I like the gun, I'm going to vote for that guy right there. You don't need to do anything now to get a right-wing vote. Just fall in line with the orthodoxy, and you will get elected. I mean, I hate to say it, but watching shit like this, it makes me think, you know, maybe we could have actually, they'd secede. All right, next. I'm running out of time here. God, I got to cut out the science story again. I don't want to do that, but I have to. All right, we'll do World's Dumbest Robbers, and then try to squeeze in the Gilbert Gottfried one, which I've been trying to do all week. This next story is a classic because it's about a guy who has to be one of the world's dumbest robbers. So a guy went into the Home Federal Bank in Oregon about 2 weeks ago. He slipped a note to the teller that said he was robbing the place. And, of course, proper protocol in these situations, a lot of people don't know this, but you're actually supposed to listen to the demands because you don't want any violence to break out. So the guy got away, or at least he thought he did, but when the police came to investigate, they found out that he had written the note on the back of a receipt that had his personal information on it. What a fail. Man, you are so stupid. So the cops simply made a couple phone calls, one to a government agency to get info off of his food stamp account number, another to a store he frequents, and then quick little internet search, bada bing, bada boom, you're done, you're caught. So he's 54 years old, his name is Robert Short, and he even looks like this. Doesn't appear to be the smartest guy. Looks like there might be a couple screws missing, elevator's not going to the top floor. God, some people are so stupid, man. But you know what, and this really stuck out to me as I was reading this article. Like, this will get play. Like, this will get some coverage in the mainstream media because it's funny and it's stupid, right? And people always think, oh, yeah, look at this criminal. Look at how he's acting. That's terrible, terrible. But think about it. How much money could this guy have possibly gotten away with? Not much, right? And then he got caught anyway. But think about, compare what this idiot did to what Wall Street does. What happened during the Great Recession. I mean, again, I always give this example, but I keep coming back to it because it's so in your face. HSBC laundered money for Al-Qaeda, and nobody went to jail. They laundered money for Al-Qaeda, for Hamas, for the Iranian government, and for Mexican drug lords. Not a single person went to jail. They did billions of dollars of business with terrorists. Nobody went to jail. But this guy's going to jail, you know, or how about Goldman Sachs? They sold packages to their clients and said, you're going to make so much money with these subprime mortgage packages. Trust us, trust us. Then they turned around and bet for those same packages to fail. So it was fraud. You sell something saying it's good. You turn around and bet against it. Pure case of fraud. No debate, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Only one person from Goldman Sachs went to jail when everybody there was doing it. And the guy was the fall guy because he had brazen emails talking about it. But they can do that and get away with it. We can give bailouts with no strings attached, so all of our hardworking taxpayer dollars, middle-class people, we give a bailout to these Wall Street companies, right? No strings attached. They turn around and give bonuses to the people who bankrupted the companies, and then they buy new private jets. Remember, they were going to go bankrupt, but they bought new private jets. They remodeled their offices, and it cost millions of dollars. They don't go to jail. None of them went to jail. So they're robbing billions of dollars from the taxpayer. Nobody goes to jail. Why? Because they have political connections. But this dipshit here, world's dumbest criminal, he gets away no problem. He's guilty no problem. Just, hey, we found him, we caught him, now he's going to jail for a very long time. Let's take a little bit of that, cowboy mentality of let's go get him, let's bring him in, let's lock him up. Let's apply that to Wall Street, please. I'd really appreciate that. All right. Do I have time? Fuck it. I'm going to try to squeeze it in. Who cares? I'm a badass like that. This might cut off mid-story. Dr. Drew on HLN decided to invite on Gilbert Gottfried. That may have been a mistake because what ensued was one of the shortest, most awkward TV news conversations ever.
I follow Gilbert Gottfried on Twitter, and he's always talking about the women on my panel, and this is sort of a women's issue.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons I invited him in here. I assume
surround yourself. You surround yourself with these hot pieces of ass. And it's kind of like you have a story, someone was killed in their home, and then you go, and now we're going to talk to a bunch of girls that you'd pound like there's no tomorrow.
Well, they have to be well-trained professionals. Go ahead, Michelle.
I have no words. I'm ready for commercial.
Michelle,
tell
me what
you're wearing.
Well, like Dr. Drew said, all of us are very intelligent, smart women, and I would hope that we bring more to the table than our looks. But
there you go. Go ahead, Gilbert.
Dr. Drew is better than the Playboy Network.
So we will leave it at that to get Michelle out of this. Michelle is in the I don't know if you know Michelle, if you can see this, but you're right next to Gilbert on the panel there. So I'll get you out right now. We're going to go to commercial, and I have the
awkward. I don't know if it's just me. I mean, I know some people like him, but I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get Gilbert Gottfried. Why are you talking like that? Does anybody really think he talks like, if he's on a random phone call talking to his mother, hey, Ma, let me tell you about these hot pieces of ass. She'd be like, Gilbert, why are you talking like that? Why are you doing your act? Shut the fuck up. I raised you. I know you don't talk like that. Nobody talks like that. And also, his eyes are closed. Why are his eyes closed? Is that part of his act, too? Why did he originally think that was funny? Where did that idea come from? I'll just close my eyes, and that'll get me more laughs. What the fuck? Where are you getting these ideas from? But I figured out why first of all, that was the shortest segment ever. They were like, okay, and Gilbert's here, and now you're gone. Thanks for making us feel awkward. But I think I finally understand why they brought him on in the first place. That's HLN trying to be cool, trying to be like new media, which is growing, trying to be like the internet. And their idea is, we got to be more real. We got to be more real. We got to bring on comedians, make people laugh and stuff, and do, you know, really connect with the audience. Didn't work out too well because it's Gilbert Gottfried. Okay, there's other comedians who are less awkward to bring on and who make more sense and who can connect better. But either way, that segment was delicious. All right, out of time, guys. Love you to death. We'll see you back here Monday. Peace. I'm out.